Hey, listeners, Cody here. Jared and I decided to actually record a little bit different episode. So apologies if you were tuning in to listen about automation in the workplace. We actually tackled, who's at fault for consumerism in America. So talking about the company the actual consumer themselves. So listen in.
Six-pack discussions today, Jared Jones. What's the topic?
See, we're going to be talking about consumerism. What is it? Is it good? Is it bad? Is there a way to fix it? Do we need to fix it? All things revolving around consumerism. And ultimately, whose fault is it? Is it the company's fault for pushing all these different products and services on us? Or is it the market's fault for demanding all these different products and services?
Yeah, it's kind of weird, right? Like,
what came first, chicken or the egg?
Yeah, it is like
that. Every piece of content I digested about this subject, I just kept on coming to that conclusion.
Chicken or the egg. Yeah. So consumerism is, I'm guessing, the purchasing and consuming of goods and services. Is that kind of the definition?
In its highest form, it's not really just the purchasing. I almost want to say it's almost the excess of purchasing. You know, that keeping up with the Joneses mentality.
That's funny. So that was when I was researching.
Yeah.
A lot of times what they would say is keeping up with the Joneses is essentially how consumerism has grown into.
That's the negative connotation associated with it. Yeah.
Okay.
But as far as in its true definition, without any sort of connotation associated with it, it is the purchase of goods and services, right?
The use of it, huh?
Yeah.
Because even if I go down and say I'm going to make a salad or I'm going to make some steak and potatoes, that's probably part of consumerism.
Yeah, so I guess just for the sake of this podcast, make sure that you and I are
defining
saying,
it. Yeah.
Are we going with the normalized present definition, or are we talking about it at its roots, what it is?
I'm up with either one. Whatever. Which one do you think? Do you think it's the one?
Honestly, I feel like it'll resonate a little bit more. It's a little bit more realistic if we put it in today's terms. It's the excess of purchasing these goods and services.
Yeah, so anytime we're using goods that are probably in excess, then we probably should. Okay, I'm good with that. So one number that I found that I thought was, guessing is pretty dang close. It was based in 2019, a study done. The average American, check this out, has, guess how much in goods, dollar amount, if you want to guess, in goods in their home that are not used and considered excess.
Wow. I wouldn't even know. Did the article go how they even quantified that? I mean, that's kind of...
Yeah, they just said, okay...
Like a vase, like that vase behind you. Are we technically using that vase with flowers in it? Like, I don't know how you quantify that.
Yeah, do you change the flowers out or
no.
Do you get any type
of... I never do. Brittany does.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. So there might be some use. So I think what they were saying is like
picture frames. Are those...
No, those are getting used, right? The picture's in it. You look at them.
Okay.
So I think use is kind of a weird one because
I don't know how you quantify that
benefit. So I guess what they're kind of saying is like, oh, do you have another vase that's in storage that just hasn't been touched?
Okay, interesting.
Right. Do you have maybe an extra iPhone that still works, but you've replaced it with another one and it's sitting in a drawer?
That's actually a separate issue.
Yeah.
With companies intentionally doing that.
Yeah. But so those,
what is the intentional obsolescence?
Yeah. But some people don't. It's not like they're obsolete. People just want to buy the next new thing. Unfortunately,
true.
And we're going to get
to
that a little
so
bit.
So your question, honestly, man, it's really interesting how they quantified that. And with that, I don't even feel comfortable throwing it.
3,000?
I was going to say 1,000, but sure, we'll go with 3,000.
Yeah, the average American, which is actually a lot of money to some people. $3,000 in just goods that don't get touched ever. That's a lot of money.
Let's see. The average household income, I believe, is what? 50,000 plus or minus?
Yeah.
So we're talking just under, what is that, 5%, 6%?
Under
6-7%.
Yeah, exactly.
So I mean, a pretty good chunk. Whenever you talk about take-home pay from that 50,000, I mean, we're talking about a pretty considerable amount of money.
15%,
because obviously you purchase those goods and services post-tax. So
They're actually just goods. The services they didn't even do I'm guessing.
Oh, I was just thinking like unused gift cards that are in your junk drawer or something like that. That's what I was thinking from a service standpoint. Maybe I don't know.
Yeah, what about like a subscription service that you don't touch?
That's a good one too.
So that's why I think
like
services.
The Netflix that you forget about. Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought of services maybe like. Like a gift card to a Medicare, pedicure, massage, something like that. That's what I was thinking from unused service. Anyways.
Yeah. So consumerism.
So
whose fault is it? What are you thinking here? Maybe we should talk about not whose fault it is yet, but.
Is it good? Is it bad?
Yeah.
And then we can kind of go into the fault.
I like that idea.
So in your opinion, let's hear it. You know, give me a high level overview. What do you think?
Yeah. So consumerism, I think. I'm going to actually say it is not a good thing. to the extent that we currently are at. I think the pace is a little crazy, and I will even say to even my own fault, I went through a stage, and I think I moved out of it, and maybe in some other portions I have not, but I went through a stage where I kind of did want the newest iPhone, where I said, hey, you know what? I want the newest pair of, Nike Freeze.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Nike Freeze? Yeah, exactly, right? Where I was like, oh, yeah. Every year, Nike would come out with a new pair of free tennis shoes, which are like their trainers. And so I look back, and I'm thinking, why? That was a waste of money, and there was no real benefit that I received by doing that. And now it's like, hey, if my phone breaks, or if it just slows down to the snail's pace, or if my battery doesn't work anymore. So I replace things now at a pace.
On a needed basis rather than a wanting basis.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to say I don't think the consumerism that we're currently at is probably healthy. I don't know if that's my final answer.
Are you talking about like from a mental health standpoint? You know, the...
Good question.
I actually wanted to go down that road because the dangers of this excess consumerism that we're kind of facing right now is unfortunately... What is the expression? Broke people can't act rich for long. Rich people can act broke forever,
mm-hmm.
right? So whenever you have these people that are constantly, you know, chasing that next pair of Nike Freeze, next iPhone or whatever, fill in the blank there. But the dangers is you're spending money that you don't have.
Yep.
And, oh, wait, the banks and credit unions have offered this fantastic product called a credit card.
Yeah.
And I can, you know, charge $1,000 and make a $100 payment for the next 8 years, you know, and...
It's funny. Remember the product?
I knew I was going to be able to work in financial literacy in this podcast. I was worried, but...
Remember the product that I am just amazed is now the most common product that I'm seeing everywhere?
What's that?
I told you about this, and it's better than a credit card because you don't actually have to apply for it or anything like that. Now, any company is offering it. It's called Buy Now, Pay Later.
Yeah.
That right there is probably the scariest four words from a consumer standpoint because that makes me consume... before I'm actually able to.
Well, you get your instant gratification. You get your hit, and then you have to deal with it later.
The cost is later.
So anyways, this is a very long way of saying is I think one of the dangers of this excess and consumerism is the mental health component that is likely going to be taking because you're accumulating this excess debt along with your goods and services. So that's what actually is kind of frightening for me.
So the debt itself, so let's just a scenario. 5 years down the line, I've gotten now 3 new iPhones. I've gotten a shoe collection. I've replaced, you know, a lot of things in my house over and over again with IKEA items. And I have, let's say, about $15,000, $20,000 in credit card debt. I look back and I say, whoa, maybe I didn't need all this stuff. Now I have this burden of debt. You think that's going to bring down the overall mental stability or you think it's going to be a cause depression or anxiety almost?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I follow.
100% I agree with that. And that's why I'm so concerned.
Okay.
Because right now it's not cool to have your iPhone that still has the home button. Like, you know, that's not cool. But, you know, saving that $1,000 and investing it in maybe an IRA or some sort of brokerage account or whatever different financial product, that's not sexy. You know, that's not keeping up with the Joneses for whatever reason.
So here's another, maybe we'll get through this one. I like your kind of thinking of the financial impact on the mental illness. What about this? The competitiveness of consumerism. So I think one of the challenges right now that a lot of people deal with, let's say, you know, you're good buddies or your girlfriends or whoever you hang out with, your clique of friends. One of them getting married, and they just got a new ring.
Oh, yeah.
And now, guess what happens in that circle of friends? Well, the next one that has to propose gets a bigger ring.
The standard's been met. Yeah.
Bingo.
They've been set, right?
So now, all of a sudden, there's this competitive consumerism. Maybe it's a car. Oh, wait, they just got a brand new car? Well, I guess we need a new car, husband
new home,
or wife.
Yeah.
Maybe we need a new, bigger home or whatever it is. So now, all of a sudden, you're trying to compete with your friend group or your clique group. And if you either can't meet that, so say I can't do it, I can't afford the ring, and I'm just going to make that internal decision not to buy that new ring or that new car, well, I may feel like I'm not as well off or I'm not doing as well as somebody else. Unknowingly, that person went into huge amounts of debt, of course. But there's that competition of keeping up with the Joneses, which I love your last name. I'm trying to keep up with you, man, this whole time. Right?
It's hard.
So if I don't do it, oh man, I'm not as well off as them.
Yep.
Now, if I do it, I fall into your trap.
Yep.
It's kind of like I'm damned if I do and I'm damned if I don't, right? Almost.
You truly are. And honestly,
from a mental side,
it's really interesting that you brought up the competitiveness, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but almost as in a negative.
It is.
Because I actually kind of find that kind of fun, yeah, as far as competitiveness. Now, by no means am I trying to say, like, oh, you know, your wife's ring was 1 carat, so I want mine to be 2 carats, yeah, or anything like that. That's not my style, but I like the competitiveness because let's say you sell a big deal.
Yeah.
Well, damn it, I want to get another one. You know, yeah, that's kind of fun. So
that's different though. That's income, but not expense.
But it is income, so we're kind of obviously turning that into different goods and services. Now, I guess depending on what we do with that income,
yeah,
is that kind of the piece of it?
So what I'm saying is not like competing on promotions or amassing.
You're talking about purely expenses. Spending, yeah, expenses competing. Yeah, okay, exactly. Now I got you. Okay, I just want to clarify that. Maybe, yeah, I misinterpreted you.
No,
that's
no,
on
no,
me.
No. So if I'm spending money on a new ring or a car, things like that, I'm either, you know, spending money that I don't have, or spending money on things that I'm gonna have to pay in the future. And that's where I feel like, man, that can cause a mental anxiety.
Yeah, it scares the hell out of me, the mental component of it.
Yeah. Man, this is weird that we even went here because I didn't have this in my notes.
Oh, really?
No.
Man, I couldn't get away from it. Whenever I started reading all this stuff, I was like, man, this is gonna cause a major mental problem.
So there's actually a word. It's called competitive consumption.
Competitive consumption. I did not come across that. That's interesting.
So you compete, in the definition loosely, is competing to increase social status amongst peers.
Hmm.
So, you know, think about, you know, getting a brand new watch or, you know, newest pair of like gold chain or a new car. That you've seen that.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I think we've all maybe fell into it a little bit.
Wanted for something.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, oh man, that looks cool. Maybe can I research that and maybe I can afford
maybe
that.
I can make that work.
Bingo.
Yeah. I can afford the payments.
Yeah.
Payments is another way of saying debt, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit nicer, but it's debt.
So competitive consumption.
Okay, so maybe unless you have any more points, you know, con consumerism, you know, mm-hmm, do you have any more? Should we move into the goods?
No, I have like a hard example that I kind of want to think through.
I guess maybe the, but, okay. I was
but
thinking
not
maybe,
right now.
Let's maybe another con, I think, is what it does to the environment.
Yeah.
You know, obviously this excess of production of these goods and services.
That's
obviously
weird. That's my example.
Ah, okay.
But it's all right. Go ahead.
Well, I'll steal your thunder there. My bad.
I didn't realize that.
So, I mean, obviously the production of these goods and services is not like it just comes out of thin air. Like, no, these are obviously different taxes, you know, labor tax, not taxes in the literal sense, but I'm talking, you know, different
taxes on the environment.
Yeah, exactly.
What you're saying.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, you know, these different, you know, fill in the blank industries, they obviously have to meet the consumer demand, mm-hmm, with obviously the needed excess supply. So, it's killing our environment as well.
Every single thing that our listeners and me and you right now are either touching, wearing, or sitting in came from the environment.
Literally everything.
Every single
everything
thing
that you see.
Yes. Unless you are looking at a forest or looking into the desert or looking into the ocean and just not seeing anything that's man-made, great. But anything that is a normal person right now that you're looking at, that is man-made to some extent or is 100% man-made. And it means that we had to extract those resources and manipulate them into a way that is better for us. These headphone wires.
The phone you're listening to this podcast
bingo.
On.
Bingo. The paper that I have my notes here on. These beer cans.
Your t-shirt.
Bingo. And so in some ways we could say, okay, well, hey, those are renewable. Okay, well, we're still manipulating the environment. I'm not saying that we can get rid of everything.
No, look,
and I don't think you are either.
I'm not trying to turn this into like, you know, free Mother Earth. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I do think we need to do a better job, but people don't really realize. And honestly, what it is, I feel like this is almost a common theme in a lot of our podcasts, is people don't realize their consumption, their spending. You know, everything comes with a cost.
Yes.
And not a literal monetarily exchange of a cost, but I'm talking about a cost on your environment or a cost on your wallet.
There's a cost to anything.
Cost of time, yep, et cetera. I mean, you don't really think, and I'll even be real, this beer can right here, I am not thinking as I'm putting this up against my lips,
no,
oh man, the aluminum that it took, or what about the farm equipment that it took to get the hops and the water. I'm not thinking that.
No.
And I wouldn't expect anyone to.
Nope.
But whenever we talk on a grand scale, whenever we talk about 7 billion people, or I guess just in America, 330 million, you know, we have to think a little bit grander here.
Yeah. And so that's where I think it's a good and a bad thing of consumerism, because as we have innovated over the years, I think in general, the capitalist or the business owners have looked at their operation process and they wanted to become either more efficient, right? Or they wanted to offer goods that possibly the market demanded. And I'm going to kind of go out on a limb and say that in general, most business owners are always going to want to kind of want more profits. So they're going to look to become more efficient or provide a product that is demanded by the market. So if the market demands this, and this is where maybe I'll talk about my stance a little bit later, but in general, the company will go ahead and say, okay, well, hey, looks like nobody wants to buy beer in cans anymore because aluminum is bad to extracting from the environment.
Sounds like we're going to have a lot of beer bottles then.
Bingo. Oh, well, what about the glass? Okay, well, we'll do paper cartons.
Plastic, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. The neat thing is whatever I demand or you demand or the general population demands, do you think this beer company is just going to go out of business because they're going to use cans? No, they're going to find
an alternative. They're going
to figure out a way. Exactly.
They got to respond to the market wants and needs.
Bingo. Or say I'm...
It's a great thing about capitalism.
Exactly. I will respond well to the market. Or say that all of a sudden glass bottles are easier to produce and they become lower cost. Well, I'm going to move to that anyways because it's more efficient.
Sounds like I got to get my marketing team on how glass is actually better for the environment.
Bingo.
Yeah.
So I think on the other side of talking about maybe some of the good things about consumerism is that if we decide to consume things that we want to, or if we, you know, the entire market says, hey, we want this product because it's better for the environment, guess what? The market will react.
Agreed.
That's what I'm trying to say. The market reacts to what we demand.
Yep, I agree with you.
Which is interesting. Yeah, I don't think a lot of people take that into perspective almost. I don't know. I didn't until I was reading about this.
You know, truthfully, Cody, neither did I. And that's really where it was really interesting to go through the different articles and publications about this problem. To be determined if it's really a problem, but it is a hot topic.
Yeah.
So, all right, man, we're moving into our second beer.
Yeah, want to do a review?
Yeah. So you picked this beer out, so I'll let you kind of set the stage.
Yeah, so I went after work today and went to BevMo. So shout out to those guys. And as you guys probably know, they have a pretty big selection. I was kind of actually intrigued by the packaging of this beer. It was in like a cardboard box, six pack. And it's from Boulder, Colorado. It's called Boulder Beer is the brewery. This one is called Shake, like a milkshake almost. And I think it actually tastes very similar to a milkshake. I don't know if Jared agrees, but what it is a dark chocolate porter with some natural flavors added, it says on here. And it's funny.
You know, why don't you say that other phrase in there to really kind of man it up for
and,
you?
And I was actually going to say it. Jared's just going to call me out about it. But what I think is kind of interesting, we're not actually using straws, but it actually says straw is optional. So I'm wondering if because it tastes so much like a milkshake that they think that you should be drinking this out of a straw.
It's got to be it.
Probably. So for last little bit here, it looks like this is a 5.9, so a little bit higher on the alcohol per volume spectrum, so 5.9. Overall, I'm going to give you my score, and then Jared, you can score it. It is a porter, so I'm a fan of darker beers, where Jared is maybe not. I think he's actually going to score this kind of high because it is like a milkshake. You could drink this very easily. For our listeners, I'm going to give this like a 4. I think a 4.0 is actually perfect.
Wow.
What do you think, Jared?
Wow. So truthfully, you know, I've made my stance on beer pretty firm over the last, what are we at? I think episode 11, 12 at this point.
And you're not a big chewer.
No. I don't like to chew my beer before I swallow it. You're right. So stouts and porters really aren't my style. However, if I'm going to be forced to drink a porter, this isn't bad.
Oh, I knew it was actually pretty good.
So with that, I think I got to go probably 2.9.
Oh, wow.
2.9.
2.9.
But you got to understand, my porter scale probably only goes to like maybe 3.5 if it just blows my mind away.
How smooth is this though?
Oh, yeah. It's great and smooth, but it's just so heavy.
Oh, it feels heavy.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Okay. Anyways, well, solid, hey, shout out solid. To if I'm ever forced to get a porter, I wouldn't mind ordering this again at a bar. If every single IPA, ale, blonde, whatever is off the market there at the bar, I would get this.
Okay, well, shout out to Boulder Beer for making a great beer on my side. Jared's giving it an average score of right below a 3.
It's great for porters. Yeah, great for porters.
So moving on to our second kind of section here. Yep. I think last time I went first on kind of different ways to maybe fix this, different scenarios. I know you said it's going to be kind of hard to fix because it's a chicken and egg situation.
Exactly.
But what, as Americans, should we be cognizant maybe of? Maybe that's the question that we should be answering. What should we be cognizant about consumerism?
So I actually have an idea about that. I didn't know how I was going to be able to work it in because I've had this idea for a couple of days now as I've been really trying to research this. And this is a little out there, and I tried to come up with some sort of quantifiable data point as far as when this company really gained popularity and maybe there was an increase in consumerism. Social media. Mm-hmm. If we figure out some way to really, and I know there's been a couple documentaries on Netflix and Hulu, et cetera, as far as the dangers of social media, but it's one of those things, if we kind of curb our obsession, in our meaning, you know, America's obsession with social media.
Oh, interesting.
I think that has fueled consumerism to truly new heights. I know, you know, I'm sure across your research as well, it really started to see a pretty significant spike, and I believe in that Industrial Revolution time frame. I couldn't find it, but I almost think there's an equal, if not greater, spike in the social media revolution.
So can I add a little bit?
Please.
Two things I think you are 100% right on. Social media does what really well? It allows me to compare to my peers.
You literally look at your peers' highlights on a daily basis.
And what are you more likely to share with your peers? The absolute highest value items that are around you, or the mud pie that you just built in your backyard or something?
The Louis bag that you just
Bingo.
Got.
Bingo.
Yep.
So you are getting now a distorted part of reality. And then the second thing I was going to say is social media has also become really good at helping others sell products.
Yep.
It's become the number one probably
from an ad
source.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So those two things make social media probably, you're right, a multiplier.
So I wasn't talking about the ad space, but that's a valid point.
Damn, Jared.
But it's really the consumption, the obsession, the hours that our kids and young adults, and honestly, it's even moving to the adults now, that they just obsess over social media, as they're just scrolling through Instagram mindlessly, and they see, heck, there is a market out there. People with private jets rent them out for minutes at a time so individuals can get pictures on their private jet. They're not going anywhere. They're going to the tarmac.
Keep up with the Joneses kind of thing. Let me show.
Once I realized there was a market for that, yeah. I was like, this is ridiculous.
It's all fake.
So honestly, I think the way we can kind of curb this excess, because look, nothing in excess is ever good.
Yeah.
I literally can't think, even water, air in excess is bad for you, right? So I really think we have to address the root cause is this obsession and this perpetuation, rather, of keeping up with the Joneses. And I think that's really the social media piece.
I like social media. That's a good piece. So let's maybe accentuate, because we got, of course, more beer on
there. What you got, man?
Well, I was going to say, let's keep on going your route, and then I'll talk about mine maybe.
Okay.
So let's get rid of the obsession with social media. We, of course, don't want to mandate anything.
No. By no means am I trying to say that. But
if you're a parent, or you're maybe going to be a parent soon.
Yep.
What do you think about, because me and you didn't grow up in a social media world.
No, I don't think MySpace was even around until what, probably
seventh, eighth
mid? Grade. I thought it was like early to mid high school.
No,
was it seventh,
eighth
grade?
I think Facebook came out around that time.
Okay.
So let's say MySpace.
You and I just hanging out. I mean,
yeah.
We got out and did stuff. We never were social media guys.
No. Like, oh, great. Your MySpace, you put your page
top
together,
8 and
you
change your song.
Yeah, but you didn't go on there and chat people.
No, could care less.
Exactly. You didn't go and look at other people's stuff. Facebook, we played Farmville or something. That was the only reason we had Facebook, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I didn't care about it. Vividly remember Farmville.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we did not grow up where we had social media part of our culture from, like, say, 7+. Because I think most kids nowadays are getting phones around 7, 9, 10 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
and
crazy.
I guarantee one of the first apps are downloading
Instagram.
Bingo.
Facebook.
Snapchat, all that stuff.
Snapchat, yeah.
Right? Which is sad, because those things are all just
fake
time wasters. Fake. It's going to ruin.
You're not getting better.
So if you're a parent, and maybe for your recommendation here, because you're the one kind of saying, "Hey, social media is the devil, or it's a problem." What about that? Not the devil.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's over the top. But it's a problem that you could mitigate if you wanted to.
It's an avoidable problem.
Yeah.
It's an avoidable barrier.
So you're a parent, or you're an upcoming parent. How do you maybe help that out, knowing that issue?
Yeah, honestly, so one thing I do think it's, I think it's important because I think you and I have, we have friends that it's impossible to look them in the eye and have a conversation without them wanting to grab their phone.
Yeah.
And just mindlessly scroll.
At lunch and dinner.
Lunch, dinner, happy hour, whatever. Whatever the occasion, whatever the normal social occasion is.
Yeah.
And honestly, you know, around our age, you know, in that 30-ish, you know, plus or minus age bracket, if it's coming to a problem then, and we weren't really introduced this until a later age in life.
It's contagious.
So honestly, I think the parents really need to parent here and say, hey, to be successful in life, you need to learn how to communicate.
In person.
True relationships are built looking another person in the eye, yeah. Shaking their hand, you know, actually conversing, figuring out a way, hey, Cody, what makes you tick? Jared, what makes you tick, et cetera, and really start bonding. You're not going to bond. You don't really get that via social media. It really frustrates me whenever people try to pretend that, oh, they keep up with so-and-so because they liked their post the other day. That's not keeping up with someone. You have no idea how they're doing.
It's all fake. It's all there's some.
You have no idea. Just because your buddy is posting pictures of their son or daughter and you like their photo, or of course, you know, picture how cute their family. Comment how cute their family is and obsessed and blah blah blah. You don't know that child. You don't really. That's a double tap of your thumb or, you know, a couple clicks of your keyboard there. Yeah. That's not really keeping up. So honestly, I think it's on the parents to really teach. What are good core values and how do you be successful in life? And I do think a foundational pillar to becoming a successful person, leader, et cetera, is really understanding the dynamics of human-human interaction and building on that relationship piece, man. What would you say to that?
Yeah, you know, I think I agree, and maybe I'll say some specifics on it. You know, as we right now, me and my wife are raising a small one-year-old, my wife is way more cognizant than I am of this, and she constantly is on me about having my phone even out.
To not even establish those.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Which is good. I agree with her, actually. Yeah, good for 100%, her. 100%, right? So she doesn't do it ever. She's pretty good about it. If Lillian is up, you know, during nap times and bed and all that kind of stuff, unless she's working.
Yeah, of course.
But we're all, you know, if I'm cooking or something like that, I might watch a YouTube video while I'm cooking, which, you know, sounds not... you know, it doesn't sound crazy. I don't think that's crazy to be watching a video about something or listening about news or something like that while I'm cooking. But if she's up, she now is not getting my attention. The video is. And so Anna, of course, gets on me about that, my wife, saying, hey, you know what? She's only up for so long. You only get to see so much time of her. And she only sees you always, you know, looking at your phone, watching a video or something like that, even though I may be cooking food for her. And so just personally, I try to make a very conscious effort to say, hey, you know what? You're right. Put my phone down. I can watch that video later when she goes to bed.
Well, you know what's funny about that is I know you're giving a very personal story, but just knowing you, something tells me that video is some sort of podcast, some sort of educational piece.
It is, yeah. It's not like it's...
So I just want to put this in perspective. Yeah. It's just the act of being on your phone. It's incredibly rude.
Yeah.
If you're trying to spend time with someone, well, then damn it, spend time with me.
Bingo. Yeah, even though it's somebody that you almost, she's of course one for our listeners. So it's not like she's spending time with me, but I need to make a conscious effort to spend time with her because she actually is getting value out of it that she does not know about yet.
Well, also it just kind of forms good habits because as she continues to grow up.
Bingo.
And of course we're using you and Lillian as general examples. Yeah. As these kids and parents start to grow up or these kids start to grow up in front of these parents and all of a sudden they see them practicing, you know, oh, it's okay if mom and dad
are on their phones.
Yeah, while we're they're not dinner. Really conversing at all.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, oh, well, dad is having his friends over and
none of them are talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're talking to people over the internet. I want to do that too.
So
there's one example.
I think it's a parenting issue. And to your point earlier, you made this a couple minutes ago. By no means am I trying to say, oh, I think, you know, the government needs to regulate the usage and mandate. And absolutely not.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is I think people really need to kind of internalize a little bit, look themselves in the mirror, like, you know, hey, whenever you get that little screen report, or I don't know how Android users, if they get that, but whenever you get that screen report on Sunday and you look at the hours spent a day and then look at the breakdown and say, what could you be doing whenever you're scrolling through social media? Let's say, what's next? It's probably an hour a day or whatever it is.
Huh, it's sick.
What could I have been doing? Because everyone, how many times do you hear it in our weekly sales meetings?
Don't have enough time.
Everyone bitches about not having a time. Yeah. Everyone. Nothing can make my eyes roll faster. Because you know what? Instead of saying I didn't have enough time, why don't you say it wasn't a priority to me?
Yeah.
Because you found time to scroll through Instagram.
Yep.
You don't always find time for phone games. And don't get me wrong, guys, I am not sitting here all holier than thou. I mean, literally, Cody and I, during our lunch break today, we played a game called Risk. I mean, by no means are we just saying that we're, you know, picture perfect humans and,
but
you know,
I don't every that time.
Every 24 hours is accounted for, and I am just, you know, grinding and everything. Don't get me wrong, we work hard, but never will you hear out of my mouth, oh, I didn't have time for that. Now, in order to not be an asshole, I'm not going to tell you it wasn't a priority to me.
Yeah.
But that's truly what's being in my head right now. If I didn't do something, now, again, by no means am I saying I'm perfect. Sometimes I do just forget, or it slips my mind, or
yeah,
whatever. I'm not perfect. I'm not going to try to portray myself that way. But you will never hear me complain like, oh, I was so busy this week, I didn't have enough time. Shut up.
There are people out there probably literally don't have enough time. Like, you know, those people like Elon Musk or like probably Jeff Bezos, right?
You ever hear about Elon Musk not having enough time? He makes time to go on podcasts.
Somehow he figures it out.
If he makes time to go on Joe Rogan podcast multiple times now, smoke weed even, like, I'm sorry, if Elon Musk can run two groundbreaking companies.
I think he's like five now.
Two major companies.
Oh, yeah.
Groundbreaking. Yes. Yeah. So it's one of those things, I understand there are going to be outliers, and I think it's safe to say Elon Musk is an outlier in multiple facets.
Yeah.
I think if we really want to, bringing up Elon Musk is a positive in this light, but also a negative in the whole social communication piece to it.
He somehow figures it out, though.
Yeah. I mean, he's a groundbreaking mind, but anyways, social all that media. Is to say is I think, why don't you kind of internalize that little screen report?
That's a good idea.
Take ownership. Take ownership of it.
No, I think, like I said, Anna, my wife, luckily, you know, there's a nice thing where I would probably not be as good without her. And she's taken, you know, upon herself to say, hey, you know, you need to do better. And I've consciously been doing it, of course, now. But for anybody that's listening, you know, how often are you on your phone in front of your kiddos? How often do you plan on being on your phone if you're going to have kiddos? And then at what point will you be okay with your kids being on their phone in front of you? I think that's something I don't have to deal with yet, and I can see it being extremely challenging, especially if I'm working or I'm having conversation with, say, friends, my family, coworkers. It may be easier to hand my kids a phone.
An iPad or a phone.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just wondering if I'm in that position, which I haven't been yet today, would I want to do that to them? Because I do think there are repercussions that are much larger than the repercussions at that point in time. What do you think about that?
So I think we're doing a little creeping into a different issue here, and I don't want to get too far down. So it all depends. So short answer, it depends. Mm-hmm. So if you hand your daughter, you know, let's just keep it personal here. If you hand Lillian a phone or an iPad or whatever, just some sort of entertainment device that would take them away from a conversation.
Yeah.
And if they're playing maybe like a little educational game, or they're trying to learn how to read while your friends are over, you know, let's fast forward a couple of years. Lillian's now four at this point.
Yeah.
And me, you, and a couple of our other buddies are, you know, we're out in the garage, you know, just, hanging out, shooting crap. So
you think her self-entertainment is fine other than coming out and trying to have a conversation with a 35-year-old guy who's trying to have a conversation with three other 35-year-old guys. I can see where you're kind of
going. So it all depends on what she's using the phone for. If she's trying to, like I said, trying to learn how to read a book, but if she's all of a sudden, you know, scrolling through social media and watching, she's seeing, because I mean, I'm sorry, you know, I'm sure you've seen some fairly provocative photos on Instagram.
Oh yeah.
So if she's starting to scroll through that and starts, wow, like, oh, that's a really cool, whatever. I don't know what a 4-year-old would be interested in from a consumerism standpoint, but you start getting that indoctrination, if you will, I guess, you know, to put it, you know,
more toys,
little hyperbole there. So yeah, more toys or whatever it is. So it all depends on what the content she is consuming. And because to kind of tie it all back into my little, you know, grandioso idea here is it's just dangerous to always continue to look at someone's, not necessarily fantasies, but highlights, I guess.
Okay.
Via social media. That's the main contributor here. That's the main point I want to get across.
No, I like it. So I'm finishing up my second beer. I don't know if you are on track, Jared, but let's close up kind of that second section with kind of Jared's thoughts on ways to fix consumerism. And some of those are just reducing your social media intake. And I think maybe helping the next generation figure out how to better consume social media so they don't become excess consumers.
There are pros to social media. It is not all bad.
No.
No, they're thought-provoking accounts that you can follow. And, of course, you know, you can keep up with your buddies. I mean, so it's not all bad. It's just it's just in moderation. Limit it.
Yeah.
But spending mindless hours on end and then going to complain to your boss how you're overworked and don't have enough time?
No, totally, totally.
Yeah. So, all right, let's hear your idea, man. You've been kind of holding out on me.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm hiding, you know, hiding out, but I'll give you kind of an example that I was thinking about a lot. So I like to redo my house a lot. I do like little house projects. A lot of projects, right? Jared knows that I always have some type of project going on because I like to improve things, right? And so one thing that we recently did was we redid our countertops in our house. So we took all of our old countertops, which functionally, they work just fine. Countertops are meant to put things on and, you know, use as cutting surfaces.
Yeah.
There was nothing wrong with those countertops. Those, you know, other than aesthetically, they didn't look pleasing. So I took those countertops off and I put on new ones. Now the new ones, I can place things on top of and I can cut things on top
just
of
just the same.
Just the same. Now aesthetically, I think you would agree they look much better.
10 times.
So I think that right there, let's just kind of break that down. Is that considered excess consumerism? Because if it is, and I'm adding to essentially the mining of that material and also adding to the, I guess, idea that consumerism is actually probably not good for the planet. So should I be one arguing also for others not to, you know, do, I don't know. It puts me in a position where those people out there that are saying, oh, the environment is breaking down, we shouldn't be using fossil fuels.
Yep.
But then also, can I also be replacing my countertops in my house? Okay. I wanted to kind of tackle that idea.
Yeah. So, and by no means am I trying to put your financial status or situation on blast, but I'm going to take a wild stab in the dark and say that you paid cash for those countertops, right?
Oh, yeah.
That did not truly stress you and your family out whatsoever. The same food was being put on the...
Yeah, me and Anna were saving for some new countertops for a little while. Yeah.
Yeah. So with that, I want to address the mental component. Okay? Yeah. Check. You were not put under any undue stress or any unnecessary or avoidable stress by doing that. You were just kind of update your house.
Yeah.
So with that, that mining company, did you need them? No. But those miners needed a job. And you contributed to the demand and the supply. I'm sorry, you contributed the demand, so therefore they had to meet the supply.
Yeah.
So you created jobs with it, obviously in a very micro scale, of course.
But I'm thinking of like, if I...
So maybe I'm the wrong person to ask, and I'm sure I would love to hear our viewers' take on this, but because my main rub with this excess consumerism is the whole mental health component about what... constantly having to buy the latest Nike Freeze or the iPhones or the granite countertops, etc. My biggest rub is they're spending money they don't have.
Yeah.
So therefore, because I know your situation and I don't really think it's that bad, and maybe I'm a hypocrite just because I've done the same thing to my house. So, you know, I've upgraded several.
Yeah.
Or my wife and I's house that we've upgraded, you know, several different elements of this. Maybe I'm a hypocrite here, but I'm not going to say that's bad.
So, no, what I was actually going to get to is...
Maybe I took it a different way.
No. We just talked about the mental health, right? So I now want to talk about maybe consumerism from the environment and the planet standpoint. And is it doublespeak? Is it hypocritical of me to say, hey, I want to help the planet be a better place for my children, but also lead to excess use of resources? So me replacing my countertops... And I'm not saying I'm fine. I get it. We're going to have to use this planet. But I think there's ways to, of course, use it in a way that's renewable. And now I 100% will say the countertops that I pulled out, they went into a dumpster.
Yeah.
Right? They went into a dumpster just like, you know, most people that replace their countertops are going into a dumpster and they're going to be trashed and they're going to go into a landfill and they're probably not going to be recycled. And, you know, they were made out of a plastic material, so they'll be there for 1,000 years. So I'm just wondering, going down the consumerism pathway, whose fault is it? Is it the guys that provided the countertop, or is it me who just said, you know what, I'm going to sign the check for, you know, $1,800 for these new countertops? Whose fault is it?
You know, I wrestled back and forth. Ultimately, it's consumers.
Because I wrote the check.
Yeah.
I'm the one that said I need it.
We've literally said, actually, why'd I even hesitate? You and I were in complete didn't even skip a breath agreeance of if all of a sudden, you know, aluminum starts skyrocketing price, all of our beers are now going to be in bottles and or vice versa. And, you know, all
they're going to make the they're going to make the sacrifice and have to switch.
Exactly.
The company will make the sacrifice to switch based on what I want.
Exactly. So
because that's not easy to do.
No, 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 no. But they have to meet. That's the blessing and the curse of capitalism, though. So I'm not going to fault the company. Yes, marketing teams are fantastic. Oh my gosh. The iPhone, the most incremental changes happen.
Got 5x zoom. The last one had 4.8.
The last one weighed 1.6 less ounces, and now this one is 1.7 less ounces. You know,
why don't I have this in my pocket?
It's actually laughable at times.
It is.
So marketing teams, hey, hats off to you guys. Kudos. You guys are great. But at the end of the day, it is the consumer. I know we kind of joked about, you know, the whole chicken and the egg concept, but I am wanting to write that check for countertops, for beers, for whatever, fill in the blank to excess. Cause you know, it's one of those things where you work hard. I mean, you make a better than average living, as do I. I know this maybe sounds kind of bad, but from an American cultural standpoint, what's the point of making a great living, busting your ass? You and your wife do, mine and my wife do. What's the point of busting your ass if you can't have a Jeep, if you can't have a nice countertops, if you can't live in a nice home? Like, isn't that kind of fun to treat yourself to nice things, to go on fun vacations to Colorado or St. Lucia or wherever? I mean, do fun things because you bust your ass and you create jobs in the process, which is great. Look, the detriment to the environment, that's terrible. I hate that. And hopefully whenever consumers start shifting our funds to companies that maybe aren't harming the environment and figuring out different, more innovative ways so we can influence that behavior from an innovation standpoint. So if we collectively truly do care about that, let's shift to the companies that are actually care about that, right? We know we're going to spend a premium, right? So we have to be okay with that.
For only short term.
Until, of course, that becomes the norm and then a new innovation is going to happen. That's a great thing, again, about capitalism. Mm-hmm. So that was a very long way of saying consumers control companies. I think so too.
And that's what I was trying to figure out is when I was thinking through this, and the countertop example is just a simplified version of it, because when I went out, I could find countertops. I don't know if there is a renewable countertop company out there that makes it from, say, like plastic bottles. Let's just say there is.
Yeah.
Right? Let's say there's a company out there that takes plastic bottles from you recycling them in your bin, melts them all down, makes some countertops. Well, those are probably cool looking countertops, to be honest. They've got the, you know, dark bottles, the light bottles, the white bottles, whatever it is, right? They got all the different colors in there. Probably looks pretty cool. Those are probably like granite. They could probably sell that, and they could now all of a sudden overtake the entire market because their material is pretty much free to receive. Yeah. And they just
go in the ocean, you'll find a lot.
Exactly. They just have to figure out a way to process it and turn it into countertops. And I think most people as a consumer would say, yeah, I'm all right with buying that.
Yeah.
It's for a good cause. The price point's pretty dang close to normal. And are they pretty hardy? Well, yeah, you know what? Yes, they are. Because
hard plastic, or glass,
or whatever it is. Great. It passes all the boxes, so that company now will be extremely successful. It'll take over some mining operations. So I just think I'm like wondering through the whole, I'm kind of waving my way through the environmental impact of consumerism. And I think if we truly care about how the environment is impacted by consuming goods, either you just don't consume at all, right? You buy your bare minimum.
Bare necessities.
Exactly. Yeah. Food, most water.
Basic clothing.
A tent.
Yeah.
Right? Because truly, a home is very detrimental on the environment. Yeah. Right? Not only do you probably kill 100,000 insects and mice and all different things by just displacing dirt.
Well, also the lumber.
Yep. And then I keep on going down.
Oh, okay. I didn't know you were
going there. That's the very first thing. But just displacing the dirt where your home is, you probably have killed over 100,000 living organisms, right? That are ants and things. Think about all these things that are deep down. You killed them all. Great. Now I have to go get lumber. Now I have to get drywall. I have to mine all of that. Wood, the metal, all these things that go in your home. Okay, well, you can't live in that if you don't believe in consumerism. You can't live in a home. You have to live in a cotton tent or something. I don't know. But
I knew what you meant.
Yeah, exactly.
I get what you're getting at. So
if I get to that point,
I feel like that's unreal. That's anti-American.
Exactly. But I'm just
saying. That's
un-American. I'm just thinking for the person out there that is saying, well, I don't want to, you know, I want to stick it to the man. I think it's not possible. So how do we do it in a way that is possible to fix the situation that we believe we are in? We buy things from companies.
Within our means.
Yep, that are from companies that are doing what we want. And what will happen? So let's just give an example for, like, say, fossil fuels. Because I think this is kind of a concept we're going to talk about here in the future, I think.
Yep.
Is fossil fuels. Let's not go too deep down in the water, but there is a stigma around using of fossil fuels. Most people still drive their cars. So, okay, well, hey, I want an alternative. Elon Musk, we just talked about, he came up with an alternative. Now, how do you charge that battery, Jared?
I think it's just out of thin air.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That energy comes from somewhere.
Right.
And in America, most likely it's burning of fossil natural fuel. Gas or coal. Majority of it's natural gas or nuclear energy. Okay, great. So it's still coming from somewhere, but at some point in the future, as long as we keep on investing in those things, the cool thing is that we'll get to a point where we actually will be getting goods from a what we think good thing.
So essentially what you're saying in a short way of kind of summarizing, I guess, is the consumers dictate our impact of the environment with our behaviors, with our dollars, really.
Dude, you said that a minute ago, and that's exactly what I'm saying, yeah.
I mean, yeah well, it's the third beer, so I tend to repeat myself. Now, honestly, I think in a fundamental principle, because we do have the power to influence companies' behavior with our collective dollars,
yeah,
we have the ultimate say-so. We control the consumerism, and honestly, I'm overall okay with it, simply if little asterisk there, if we can do it responsibly. If you bust your butt, let's say you work your freaking butt off for all year and you get a sweet little Christmas bonus. If you want to treat yourself or your family or your wife or whatever to maybe new countertops or a fun vacation, yeah, or do it.
Yeah.
Love it. That's what life's all about. You know, obviously be responsible, invest appropriately and all that good stuff. I'm hoping that's taken care of from a homestead. Yeah. But I'm okay with consumerism if done responsibly. Yeah. But, you know, charging up, racking up all these excessive credit card debts, that's when I get a little apprehensive. I'm like, all right, guys, pump the freaking brakes here. What's the issue here? Well, I'm spending 3-4 hours a day scrolling through Instagram and constantly seeing, you know, my girlfriends or my guy friends, you know, and all this stuff. Well, is that really making you better?
Settle down on the social media. Stop comparing yourself, because everybody is going to show their best front on social media, of course, right?
And also the filters.
Yeah, all that fun stuff.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think I agree on the social media thing. I think that's a individual fix. My fix is more like, hey, if you really care, and I'm not saying that I'm like an altruist or a top of the line environmentalist by any means, right? I do care about the environment because I love enjoying it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Most people do. But if you're going to be that person that says that everything in our world is bad for the environment, what are you specifically doing?
Yeah. I mean, it's very similar to, I don't want to, you know, put anyone on blast, but, you know, it's good for thee, not for me, right?
Exactly.
So in its high level form, I'm not trying to, you know,
no,
putting anyone on blast here, but those people that, you know, are always pointing fingers except at themselves.
That's where I was trying to get to. I think there's a lot of people out there that say, well, you need to do this differently. Okay, well, you're doing this. You live in a house.
Yeah.
Guess how many
you can't pick and choose which one you want to follow.
No.
You know.
And so I think as a group, we just all individually need to say, yeah, you know what? I'm going to buy from this company because of this reason.
If you truly believe that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then after a period of time, we all will just, you just can't legislate it, because what will happen is black markets. What will happen is that people will revolt.
Look, we have found that if you make dumb rules and you keep people in cages, and if you tell them not to do something, I mean, fundamentally, there's a reason why toddlers are terrorists. You know, if you tell them not to do something, they're going to freaking do it. And all that happens is we get a little older, you still want to do it though, right?
Yeah.
So you just really have to make up your mind from a consumer behavior standpoint, and that's how you truly dictate change.
And the cool thing is the best companies out there are ones that build that for you, right? They tell you how awesome they are, how much better they are than the next. And that's who's actually really good at convincing people. It's not regulations. It's not laws. It's not rules.
No.
It's a new company that comes out and says, hey, guys, just so you know.
This is the problem.
Yeah.
This is what we solved.
All the clothes.
You didn't know that this was a problem?
Yeah.
Because as we admitted at the very beginning of this podcast, with this beer that you're drinking right now, we didn't think of the water that it's impacting, the land that's impacting from growing the wheat and stuff, the aluminum. We don't think of that.
Nope.
But it takes a person to convince us or to really sell us or educate us about the problem. I'm like, oh, shoot. Wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And then give me a viable solution to pivot. Yeah. Let me spend my dollars there.
There's a guy, we'll maybe finish a little bit and maybe you have one more thing, but there's a guy out there right now. You know, I don't know his exact, his name, but he is part of the Great Garbage Patch in Pacific Ocean, which is huge. You've heard of this, of course, right?
Of course.
Plastic. He is...
It's like a size of a freaking island, right?
I think Texas. I don't know.
Oh, I didn't know it was that big.
It's big, apparently.
Oh,
but
my gosh,
he is... Okay, yeah, right now, he is our age. He is one of the sole individuals that has said, I'm going to take it upon myself and fix this. So he's went out to the Great Garbage Patch with these boats, with these nets and these long lines and stuff, and he is literally cleaning it up. Right, and so he raised money to buy this equipment. He went out there and he started cleaning it up. Now his investors are like, okay, well, I gave you a bunch of money. What are you going to do? Well, he's like, well, I got all this plastic. What do I do with this plastic? Well, let me melt it down. I'm going to sell some sunglasses. I'm going to sell sunglasses for $80 a pair. Right, for free material that he's getting. So if I collect enough plastic from the ocean, I can
material,
sell
but he's still forming it into a great product.
Yeah. So yeah. Now you make a great product. You have a great message. Hey, by the way, you're part of this mission to clean the entire ocean.
Hey, what's the name of the sunglass company, man?
You really want me to look this up?
Yeah, please.
I think it's called the.
I want our listeners to know.
Yeah, I think it's called the Great Ocean Cleanup. But let me just.
You know, honestly, whenever we post this on Instagram, I want to tag them.
Dude, it's pretty neat idea, right?
And this fantastic.
It's the exact.
How great. Thing. This is literally what we're talking about.
Yes.
If you really want to invoke change, you know, look, I don't know about Ray-Ban or Oakley or the other big sunglass providers as far as their environmental footprint or anything like that. However, what I do know, because I know they have fantastic marketing teams, that they are not doing this. And this is the exact principle that we're talking about as far as truly trying to create something out of a problem.
So here it is.
Yeah, let's hear it, man.
It's exactly what I thought it was. It's called the Ocean Cleanup.
The Ocean Cleanup. So if I go into Google and I type in the Ocean Cleanup, I can get $80 sunglasses.
Yeah, you can get these guys, their sunglasses.
Does it give me any story? Obviously, I know it's coming from the plastics, but $80, do they go towards more equipment or is it just kind of?
Oh, no, 100%. All proceeds go towards the company, which is, the company's really built around cleaning up the ocean. So would I recommend it for anybody that's listening? Go to their Instagram page. It's called the Ocean Cleanup. Looks like at the Ocean Cleanup. This guy has been like chugging along for the last 4 or 5 years, and he is probably just one of the most devoted individuals to cleaning it up out there that I know of. But then he took it and he's like, hey, I can't rely on investor money. And this is the beauty of capitalism where you just say, I have something here that I'm doing. I'm cleaning up trash.
Trying like hell, guys.
So what do I do with this trash? I sell it. I literally sell the trash that I'm cleaning up back to the people that put the trash in the water.
Hey, so one thing I want to... So that was a fantastic point. I just want to kind of end on this. So for your wedding, I gifted you a nice pair of sunglasses, right?
Uh-huh.
And shortly thereafter your wedding, you went to the ocean. Days after your wedding, you went to the ocean.
I'm going
to
help this guy out. He doesn't have to make them.
Literally, if you find a white... Were they a white? Oh, I'm sorry. Black pair of Oakleys. Please know that those were once Cody Willis's wedding gift.
Yeah, if they're out there.
He had them for 72 hours. Maybe. He comes back from his honeymoon. He's like, dude, I lost them.
No, I said those sunglasses were great. They worked really well for about 2 days. He's like, man, they broke? I was like, well, they were so nice
kinda
that the ocean wanted them. No, let's end on this.
Great podcast, man. This
I think
is,
so, too.
This is fun. I'm glad that we were able to give a shout-out to a company that we're literally endorsing. Not necessarily endorsing that company, but endorsing companies like that. So I'm glad that you had one top of mind. This is fun to promote.
Cool. You have a good rest of your day, everybody. Hey. See ya.
Bye.